Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
That's right, Joel. This is a listener question Monday. We've got five listener questions lined up. We've got a listener who is wondering if it's okay to put down less than 20% down.
Next question.
For a home purchase. Question number two. No, we're going to answer that one in full. We've got another question about when is it a good idea to buy a new used car. We've got a good, I think, rule of thumb to employ if you're in that situation, as well as investing beyond a 401k. If you're a total baller and you are maxing out your 401k contributions with your employer, what to do next?
Wait, did you submit a question this week, Matt?
That's not me. I don't have an employer. I'm self-employed, buddy. You
That's
know
true.
That.
Good point.
We got two more questions in addition to those three. Looking forward to tackling all those on the show.
Let's do it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Before we get to there, Matt, I just want to say that sometimes I might obsess a little bit about even just like small things that cost almost nothing. And this week, one of those popped up into my life. So the little air detector for your tire, the light came on in my car.
Okay.
In my Nissan Leaf.
Oh, I'm involved in this question or in this story.
Yes. So it came on and I was like, oh man, I was kind of swung by the Kroger just to see, okay, well, how much does it actually cost to get your tire inflated now? $1.75. To pump up your tires real quick. You get a minute worth of air at one of those things.
What Kroger did you go to?
The one by our house.
Wait, the...
So there's a one with a free one, but it doesn't work anymore.
Oh, I was going to say, because I've gone to the free one before, and you just kind of... Sometimes there's another car ahead of you, but you just wait a second.
You wait. Completely.
Get that free air.
And like where I grew up, there was a gas station called Quick Trip, and they used to always have free air. Yeah. It was like, get the calling card, man. And so I'd stop in and get free air whenever I needed it. But down where we live, those don't really exist. And the one at the other Kroger's broken. So trust me,
I
checked.
Because everybody goes there to get that free air.
Exactly.
Which begs another question. Is it frugal or cheap if you're waiting in line in order to not spend money to get that free air?
Well, now at this point,
probably cheap.
With all I did to save $1.75, it probably feels cheap, right? Because like, honestly, I was like, man, I think Matt has one of those things that you plug in and you pump up your own tires. And so I was like, man, I think Matt has one of these air compressors, right? That you plug into the outlet in your car and you pump up your own tires. And so I texted you and you did.
Of course.
And there I was able to save $1.75.
Yeah. So this is a question I asked myself maybe about a year ago. And I was like, how much time am I spending going to this particular gas station that has the free air? And on top of that, what if I'm out somewhere like on a trip and I need to, maybe pump it up, or maybe it's gotten so flat. I've got this one tire in particular that has a slow leak on it.
The thorn in your side or the thorn in your tire.
I think it is a thorn because it's such a slow leak. But we can take this frugal or cheap question another level, which is, are you being cheap by burdening your friend and using his air compressor versus getting your own?
I don't think that's cheap. So, we've talked before about, tool banks, borrowing friends' tools, that kind of stuff. I don't think that's cheap at all. I think that's actually what we should do. We should be a little more resourceful. We should be asking the people that we're close to, hey, do you have an aerator from a front lawn I can borrow? Whatever it is, tools that we're going to use infrequently. That's the perfect thing to borrow from someone else. So I hope you don't think I'm cheap for asking you that, but I don't think so. And I think it's a good motto to live by. Let other people borrow your stuff, borrow their stuff. And that way we can all just own less stuff. But I was probably being...
Mi casa, su casa, Joel.
Yeah. I was probably being a little cheap though in not paying the $1.75 to put the air in. But now that I know that you definitely have this, I'll never ask that question again.
Well, that's the thing. It depends on how frequently you hit me up.
That's true.
Because then it's like, all right, buddy, we're going to go in together on the next one once this one craps out. But yeah.
If it's once a week, then that's a different story. But it's like right around the fall time, those air pressure lights come on in everybody's car, it seems like.
Mine is pretty nice though, isn't it? It's got the, you can predetermine the tire pressure.
It's pretty fancy.
You plug it up and it fills it up and then it stops once it hits, in our case, I think like 33 pounds or whatever.
Yeah. How much do those things cost? Like 30 bucks?
30 bucks. Yeah. Something like that. Not too expensive at all.
Yeah.
I think mine actually even has a flashlight built into it.
Like, I noticed
that. If you're doing it at night, you want to make sure that people either see you or that you're able to see what's going on. Obviously, we all have flashlights on our phones. But I don't know. Maybe I'll link to it in our show notes because I have actually found it to be incredibly useful.
Now you know what to get me for Christmas too.
Get you a little air compressor for your car. Let's do it.
All right. Let's mention the beer that we're having on the show today. This one's called Photon Sphere. It's by Old Hickory Brewing. And our friend Christopher from South Carolina sent us this beer. Although the beer itself is from North Carolina.
Yeah, we actually did a little webinar with an organization that he's a part of. Maybe we'll share some more about that. But we'll see that for the end of the episode, along with what we think about this particular beer. But Joel, let's go ahead and get to our listener questions.
Let's do it. For anybody who wants to submit a question for a future show, well, we would love to hear yours and be able to answer it on a future episode. Just go to our website, howtomoney.com/ask. Super simple directions there to submit an audio file. It'll take you just a couple of minutes. And then, you know what? You can hear your question answered on an upcoming episode. Matt, let's get to the first one. This is about whether or not you can get away with putting down less than 20% on a home that you're buying.
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is William, and I'm from New Jersey. I'm a longtime listener, and I love your podcast. I recently paid off my student loan debt, and I can now focus on saving towards down payment for our first new home. We found out that Iberia Bank is offering a special rate for doctors and pharmacists, which both me and my wife are. It is a 30-year fixed interest rate with 3% down, no PMI, and someone that I know was approved for 2.75%. My credit score right now is around 810, and I'm confident I can get approved for a similar rate. I know that you guys always advocate for 20% down, but with no PMI and only 3% down, this offer seems to be too good to pass on. We are looking for a house around $400,000 range, and we currently only have up to 10% down. Do you think it's a better idea to put everything we have now as the down payment and lock in this offer? Or should we put just a minimum amount at 3% down and invest the rest? Please let us know. Cheers.
All right, William, thank you so much for your question. And first of all, congrats on paying off your student loans. That's no small feat. Seems like you're going right down the list. Now moving on to the next big goal, which is getting that first house. You know, to what you're saying here, some banks do offer special rates as they are serving a specific niche audience. Or, Joel?
A niche audience?
You like to say niche. I like to say niche, but sometimes I blur the lines a little bit.
That's true.
And that's exactly what it sounds like this one does. And you may have hit the jackpot here. Sounds like a great product, fixed rate loan, no PMI, with only 3% down. That's amazing. And the major reason, too, that we love to spur people towards putting 20% down is to avoid that PMI. There are some other ways to avoid paying PMI when you don't have enough saved up. You can do what's called an 80-10-10. That's one way to avoid PMI, but we're not going to dive into that. William, we're going to talk about how it is that you can potentially save some money.
Yeah, it looks like you've got some sort of specific niche loan available to you, right?
Or niche.
Yeah, either way you want to say it. and for other listeners out there too, depending on your career or profession, there are assistance programs out there that can help certain people save on home buying costs. Matt, there's this one that you and I found called Homes for Heroes. And it's a well-reviewed program that offers closing cost assistance to firefighters, law enforcement, healthcare professionals, and teachers.
And the average. And the military, too.
And the military, too, right? Yeah. And the average customer saves $2,400 when they're getting a loan through this program.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's really great. Be sure to do your due diligence, of course, and still make sure you get multiple quotes before you decide on a lender. But things like this, things like you're mentioning, William, can be a great opportunity for certain sectors of the population that have specific occupations.
Right. Yeah. And so let's specifically talk about your loan here, though. William, you know, at the end of the day, if you can only put down 3% and get an amazing rate, you know, that's that freaking low, and you don't have to pay PMI, then we would say do it. But do pay attention to maybe some of these other upfront fees that this bank might be charging. You're getting a serious benefit here, but you know there might be some costs associated with getting that benefit. And like Joel mentioned too, make sure you do get multiple quotes from other banks or credit unions so that you can compare apples to apples. Some of those additional origination fees or maybe some of those other upfront costs could make it less of a deal than it appears to be, at least at first glance.
Yeah, a lot of people look just at the rate, but there are so many other fees that often get charged when you're buying a home. And so you have to take a look at the whole picture and not just the rate that's being charged.
Yeah.
One more thing too, William, that's really, really important to note here. The trickiest thing about putting down less money on a home and then choosing not to pay down low interest rate debt is doing positive things with that money instead. Matt, you and I are totally cool with letting a 30-year mortgage ride for all 30 years and not paying it down more quickly. That's a completely fine choice.
If
there's a big if there, yeah, you're right. Yes. You're doing positive things with the money that you would have otherwise used to pay down that debt. So many people have great intentions to invest the money instead of paying off that debt, but they end up funneling the money elsewhere. it's easy to get lax and continue to inflate your lifestyle. So just make sure you have a plan to put that money that you aren't putting down on the house to use for your future by investing it so that you don't accidentally start that lifestyle creep thing going. But William, other than those things that you need to watch out for and pay attention to, we think it's a great deal, man. So make it happen.
Yeah, that's right, Joel. All right, we've got a couple more questions that we're going to get to after the break, including one, I think our first ever question from Ukraine. We'll get to that plus another one right after this break.
All right, Matt, we're going to get to that question from our Ukrainian listener here in just a second. But first, we have a question about investing when you're already maxing out your 401k.
Hey, Joel and Matt. My name is Caitlin from Iowa. I'm a couple of years out of college, and last year I recently bought my first home with the help of you guys, so thank you. I am wondering about getting started in my investments. I max out my 401k with my Roth contributions through my employer, but I'm wondering what are the easiest ways besides like an employer plan for myself to invest. I've paid down half of my student loans, and so most of those interest rates are now 5% or below, so I'd like to focus a little bit more on investing.
All right, Caitlin, first off, congrats on buying a home. You said that you actually bought it last year and that you're only a couple years out of college. That means you bought a home after having graduated 1 year ago. You clearly are doing smart things with your money, and so we want to kind of applaud you for that right there. And yeah, we hope that you are enjoying your home. And you already max out a Roth 401k as well. That's really, really impressive. And so the first thing we would recommend is to not forget to have money in savings for maybe some other goals that you might have down the road. You're already in a home, you know, so my guess is that you aren't saving for another home. but having ample savings is crucial, especially if you see yourself maybe leaving the corporate world at some point and trying to start your own business. Either way, having a fully funded emergency fund is a top priority, in particular, as so many folks have seen themselves out of work unexpectedly in industries that they had thought were otherwise were 100% safe and guaranteed, you know, to continue to provide them with an income.
Yeah, I agree, Matt. I think that is one important thing to make sure you have in order before you start investing more beyond where you're at, Caitlin. But if you do still have extra money to invest beyond that, which, I mean, with how good you are with your money, it's apparent already, you probably do. So we would say, keep going, make it happen, and feel free to invest more. So the next suggestion we would offer you is to put money into a Roth IRA and an HSA if you're eligible for either one of those or for both. If you max out both of these in 2021, in addition to your 401k, you will have invested $29,000 in total in just 1 year, which is pretty fantastic, right? Yeah, that's big time. And then if you still have more money to invest, I mean, Matt and I were fans of real estate, in particular buying single family or multifamily homes close to where you live, if that's something you're interested in, or putting money into a taxable brokerage account. That'd be a great next step too. Real estate obviously involves more time, effort, and more of a learning curve. But if it interests you, we would suggest to dig further and do some research on it and maybe consider going that route. If not, continue your investing by opening a taxable brokerage account. Well, that's a great and simple way to go too. And it sounds like you already have investing kind of under control. You know what you're doing. So that's just an easy way to continue investing, but doing more.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, a taxable brokerage account could actually almost be better than your 401k that you have there at work, Caitlin, in some instances, right? A recent assessment from Nick over at Dollars and Data, he found that if you do business with a super low-cost investment firm, but your 401k has average fees of about 0.5%, you'll actually be doing better by investing in a taxable brokerage account instead of your 401k. But that depends, obviously, on fees inside of your company's plan. And so the great thing, though, about a taxable brokerage account is that you can have access to some of those funds before retirement age as well. I find this especially valuable for you with you being such a high octane saver and investor. I think there's maybe a good chance that you'll actually hit quote unquote retirement age before you're technically allowed to withdraw that money from your 401k. And so I see that being a huge benefit.
Yeah, having some of that money in a taxable brokerage, having it accessible earlier than your 60s.
Yeah, without having to pay penalties.
Exactly. It for sure makes a whole lot of sense, in particular for someone as young and as energized about investing as Caitlin.
But Caitlin, still, you want to make sure that you are careful investing money that you'll need inside of a 10-year period, though. If you have identified other goals that you want to, you know, put that money towards, aside from investing for retirement, then, you know, you want to make sure that you've got those in accounts that are going to be a little more fluid, a little more readily available. Unfortunately, you're not going to be earning much interest within those types of accounts, but anything that you're looking to keep put for 10 years or more, invest away.
All right. And Caitlin, of course, you know, we would love for you to have your investments with a low-cost company. Fidelity, Vanguard, M1 are just a few of the ones that we think are great. That's because fees have such a major impact on your investment returns over time. Matt just mentioned if your 401k has actually higher fees, then it might make more sense after you get the match to put more of your money into a taxable brokerage account instead. And obviously, you're well on your way to financial independence, even though you're only a couple years out of college, which is just incredibly impressive. Investing at this level is going to give you so many more options for what you want your life to look like in the future. So congrats to you. And if not already, don't forget to consider ways to be generous with your money too. I think, Matt and I, we just talked about that in episode 281. And that is a really important part as we're accumulating more assets to make sure that we have a healthy relationship with money and we give some of it away. So yeah, we're proud of what you're up to, what you're doing already. And we hope you just keep crushing it. Keep at it.
One other thing. Actually, we didn't address the other loans that she had. She said she's got other debt that's at 5% or lower. Caitlin, even though technically you should be able to get, you know, a higher interest rate than that if that money is invested, don't discount the ability to get a guaranteed rate of return by paying down some of those debts that are lower. That, you know, by looking at the numbers, those are the kind of debts that you're like, well, maybe I'll keep that around. But here's the thing, even though you should be able to earn more than that in the stock market, it's not guaranteed. And so that's something worth mentioning as well. There's the emotional sort of psychological side of things as well that I find myself kind of leaning towards more and more every year I get older.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. I think once you've done a ton in the investing space, starting to prioritize debt before you continue to prioritize more investing is a good way to go, even if it's low interest rate debt.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our next question. This one is from one of our many Ukrainian listeners.
Hi, Matt and Joel. Eugene from Ukraine here. I hope that your families and you are healthy and safe. First of all, I want to thank you for the podcast, for the useful tips and insights that you give here. I have a good job, no debts, and I'm actively working on how to make money work for me, not me for the money. My question comes from the fact that I'm Ukrainian. I can use the principles of personal finance that you are talking about, but not the tools, because the investment platforms and banks that you mentioned here are not available for me, because of the Patriotic Act, if I'm right, understand the limitations. So, the question is, can you advise me some reliable investment platforms or other tools that don't care about citizenship that I could use? Thank you in advance. And when you are in Kyiv, be sure to tell me. I will treat you to a delicious Ukrainian craft beer. Cheers.
Matt, you know what I love about our listeners? Every time we get an email or someone submits a listener question, they always offer to take us out for a beer.
I feel like we've got friends all over the world.
I know.
And it makes me very happy.
I can't wait to visit Eugene in Ukraine at some point and go out for a beer together. So,
I mean, I've never had a Ukrainian beer, let alone a craft beer from Kyiv. You know,
like, right.
I mean, that just it makes me so happy.
So, Eugene, we'll take you up on that when we make it out to Ukraine. We actually get this question a lot, interestingly enough, in different spaces. And sometimes, Matt, we've actually gotten people leaving reviews that were kind of negative about the podcast because they felt like we weren't giving enough advice for their specific country. And so I think it is worthwhile to bring up why we don't do that. It's certainly not because we don't like people in other countries. It's actually really just because the U.S. financial system is so complex. There's so much to know just for the American audience of how to money, for how money functions in our society, that we just couldn't possibly educate ourselves enough on all the other countries where we have listeners. So yeah, like Eugene said, we're hoping that people can extract the principles, even though we can't really give a whole lot of specific advice.
Yeah, and on the note of principles, right? We obviously don't have personal experience or the expertise of investing in Ukraine. But Eugene, like you mentioned, non-US citizens are limited and can't invest directly with some of our favorite brokerages here in the US, like Fidelity and Vanguard. However, there are a number of stock exchanges in Ukraine that you can invest in. And like you said, this is where you can glean these principles even though the tools will vary. So as you're investing locally there in Ukraine, or possibly you have access to other markets there in Europe as well, make sure that you are trying to diversify across as many sectors and industries as possible, while at the same time attempting to keep the costs low, right? And so even though, yeah, the tools are going to vary, but those are the principles that you want to adhere to regardless of where it is that you're investing.
Yeah, and Matt, based on the fees that we're discussing on the show, I don't think Eugen can expect fees at a similar level of what you and I are used to.
Right, right. Well, in particular, if he's trying to invest in the U.S., right?
Completely.
If he's trying to invest in the U.S. stock exchange, there are some significant barriers.
Yeah, I mean, I know some of our listeners in Great Britain, they can invest through a company like Vanguard, but Eugen in Ukraine, he doesn't have that same opportunity. But I've even looked to see on Vanguard's UK site, like what are the fees for investing in, let's say, a similar fund to what you and I invest in, and they are 2 to 3 times as much.
Yeah.
So you are going to pay higher fees over there. And so Eugen, yeah, the fees are going to be more than what we're talking about over here, but you're still going to want to prioritize low fees as much as possible. And you're going to want to prioritize investing as broadly as possible too. Staying diversified in your investments is really important. And even though your fees are going to be higher, keeping your fees to a minimum is going to be crucial to your returns over time as well.
Yeah, and broadly speaking too, I mean, we are incredibly grateful for our international listeners. We know there are folks that listen in Canada, the UK, Joel, like you mentioned, Australia, Germany. We've gotten questions from Mexico before, the Netherlands, and of course now Ukraine.
I think we answered a question from a guy who called himself our number one fan in Spain.
That's right. I remember that. So we hope that this show helps, regardless of where you are, we hope that this show helps you in your personal finance journey, even with the limitations that we have in being able to offer specific advice to individual countries. Don't underestimate the power of the principles that we talk about. Even though the tools are going to be different, in some instances, I think some of the tools might be severely limited in what's available, you know, for individuals there when it comes to investing and things like that. It certainly makes me grateful for, you know, the fact that here in America, Joel, that, you know, of the options that we do have, there certainly have been maybe some embarrassing moments here in America from time to time. But that being said, the overwhelming opportunities and options that we have here, in particular with our personal finances, with our money to invest, it's really second to none.
Well, and I bet a lot of our international listeners are like, when we talk about student loans and how terrible they are and how bad it is for so many people laden with student loans, they're like, what student loans? What are you talking about? Because a lot of countries do that differently too. And they do that way better than we do.
That is true.
And so a lot of their graduates don't find themselves in $100,000 of debt that they're going to have to pay off for the rest of their lives.
Let's not even talk about healthcare, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we've got a lot of issues as a country, but when it comes to low-cost investing platforms, we're doing that one pretty well, at least. So
it's like, can I somehow get the higher education of the Netherlands, the healthcare of Canada, and the investment options of America? Yes, please.
Yeah, combine them all together. That'd be nice. One little utopia, I guess. And one last thing we want to say, Eugen, is this is a great opportunity, actually, this question, and for all of our international listeners, there's a void out there for many of your fellow countrymen that can be filled. And I think it's a great challenge to say, what knowledge do I possess about general personal finance principles and then specific things that pertain to my country that I could help other people with.
Those specific tools.
Right, yeah. So consider starting your own blog or a podcast to help your fellow country members. It's going to take some time, some research, and a lot of learning, but you could be the person that gives out really important money advice to people that need it. So Eugen, I'm not saying you have to, but I'm just saying, think about it. It sounds like you have educated yourself really well about these things. And so digging a little bit deeper and then helping other people could be an awesome path for you to go down. All right, Matt, we got more questions to get to, including one about a teacher retirement plan, and we'll hit those up right after this break.
All right, Joel, we are back for the break, taking listener questions. We're going from the other side of the world in Ukraine to our side of the world here in Georgia.
Ooh, our own backyard.
So let's go ahead and take this question from a teacher.
Hi, Joel and Matt. This is Deb here from Suwanee, Georgia. I recently found your podcast and have started to focus in on my personal finances. My first step is paying down my debt. However, I am trying to learn more about investing into my retirement. I'm a teacher, and our system contributes 6% of pay to their Georgia retirement system. I have contributed to a 403B and just started 457B. However, these contributions have been inconsistent over the last 15 years, so I'm basically just getting started. I'm halfway to retirement and can retire from teaching at age 53. and will receive full benefits from my pension at that point. Is my current teacher retirement plan enough? After looking at online calculators, I'm a little stressed out that I will be playing catch up if I want to live comfortably at retirement age. Please help.
Deb, thanks for your question. Swanee, by the way, Matt, one of the best suburbs in Georgia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Excellent downtown. They have some decent breweries up there, I think, too. That'll make it up there.
The only thing I know about Swanee is that's where, back in the day, that's where I bought my motorcycle.
I don't think I ever saw your old motorcycle.
We didn't know each other. Yeah, we didn't know each other back then, but yeah, I miss it. But I bought it used off of Craigslist. There's a guy over there that's all he works on. He just restores those old Hondas.
Oh, nice. I know Swanee, too. I think that's where the Falcons training camp is. So,
nice.
Yeah, way out there. Swanee, a lot of calling cards.
Who knew?
and Deb, let's get to your question, right? I love that you're being intentional about paying off your debt. Get after it. Also, it's nice to have a pension, and that just makes answering this question a little bit easier. Most people
are like, what's a pension, and how do I get one of those?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, tougher two these days.
Right, yeah. Most people don't have access to a pension anymore. It's an obvious perk for many teachers, plus state and federal employees, though pensions are going away, even in many of those professions these days. We don't know your numbers, Deb, in particular, but for many people, they get a full pension, that plus Social Security is going to provide for most of your needs at retirement. And so that should ease some of your anxiety when it comes to how you're thinking about continuing to invest for your future.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about continuing to invest. Let's talk about continuing working. Deb, you know, you mentioned that you can retire at 53, and that's great. But know that you don't, you know, necessarily have to stop working completely at that point. Many teachers opt to do something different, but continue to make an income, plus starting to collect that pension. So you could even continue teaching at a private school. At that point, your income will actually go up a little bit, and that can allow you to invest even more during that last decade or so before you quit completely. It kind of makes me think of the, it's sort of, I've heard that being a teacher is sort of like being a Marine, right? Like once a teacher, always a teacher. It's on one hand right now, Deb, you're probably thinking, oh no, I can't wait to retire. But at the same time, I don't know, I would maybe challenge that thought. I think it could be difficult to kind of quit cold turkey. And so I would kind of recommend to start looking and start thinking about maybe some of these different opportunities that you might want to consider, you know, when it does come time to retire. Basically by thinking about these now, I think you can kind of essentially prime yourself so that when one of these opportunities does come across your path, that's something that you can immediately pounce on.
Yeah, and that's actually what my father-in-law did. 30 years as a teacher, he retired from that school district and went to teach in a private school. He's collecting the pension and a paycheck.
Nice.
Pretty sweet life. So Deb, that's definitely something to keep in mind, something you could do. Being able to collect two paychecks at least for, you know, a few years could be really, really helpful. And also too, don't stress, but do take action. You know, Matt and I would encourage you to get consistent with your contributions, right? Investing another 5-6% of your income in the upcoming years will make a major difference in the comfort level that you're going to have with your future income when you do hit real retirement age. And you can accomplish that by either making a little bit more money or spending a little bit less. Realize that you have control over this and you can make some changes. And as you make those changes, you can funnel that money directly either into your workplace retirement plan, or you can go open one up for yourself. And Matt and I, we love Roth IRAs. That's something to consider.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I want to emphasize that note of empowerment, you know, because it's not like you're necessarily on this track of maintaining the exact same income or maintaining the exact same expenses, right? You could make some drastic changes, like maybe downsizing your home and living somewhere that's maybe a little bit more affordable. That's something that is pretty drastic, but it would have a significant impact on your ability to save. And maybe it can be something smaller as well, right? Like maybe it's as small as earning a little bit more money on the side with a little side gig. But just know that it's something that you have total control over. Your life and your finances, they're not on autopilot. You are at the wheel and you can make those changes.
Great point, Matt. I feel like, yeah, we often just kind of take life as it comes to us. We forget that there's so much that we can change, so many things that we can influence about our own lives and the trajectory of our financial lives.
Change it.
And Deb is totally at a point where she can make enough changes to provide for her own retirement and to also not have to stress about it at the same time. And Deb, I just mentioned, by the way, Roth IRAs and we talk about those quite a bit on the show, but it's one of those things where a Roth IRA might actually make more sense for you than investing more inside of your workplace retirement plan just because of the fees. So make sure to specifically look for what the fees are inside of that plan. And if they don't look so good, then instead open up your own plan with one of the low-cost companies that Matt and I talk about all the time.
Yeah, that's right, man. All right, we've got another question here for a listener or a couple, and they're considering swapping out their Hyundai for a big old truck.
Hey, Joel and Matt. My name is Nick, and I'm from Maine. I have a question about the right time to trade in a vehicle. I currently have a 2013 Hyundai Elantra that is just under 100,000 miles, but my fiance and I are thinking about getting a truck to assist with our many projects around the house. We currently also have a RAV4, but are often limited by the amount the SUV can hold. Would you recommend dealing with the limited vehicle size and driving the Elantra till it dies, or using the Elantra's remaining value to help with the cost of a new-to-us vehicle? Thank you for taking my question, and we love the show.
Sounds like it's truck time for Nick, Matt. What do you think?
Have you ever been to a monster truck rally?
Yes.
Have you really?
Of course, when I was a kid.
Oh, I've never been to one.
I need to take my kids one of these days.
Yeah.
They're so fun.
Same here.
I don't think Nick's looking for a monster truck, but if he was, I feel like it'd be an even cooler question, Nick. But when it comes to your actual question, swapping used cars, it's really not that bad of an idea, and it makes a whole lot of sense in a lot of cases. My family, we actually did something really similar recently, going from a microvan, which had a third row, but it was small. That's what it's actually called,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, micro minivan, right?
Yeah.
But is it actually just called microvan?
I think they just call it a microvan.
The Mazda 5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, great car, but now we went to a full-size minivan, a Honda Odyssey, because we needed the space once we had a third kid. It's just so much better for road trips.
And you just wanted to be like us.
And I wanted to be like you, exactly. And so, yeah, we sold our older vehicle for about $4,600, bought the new one for about $5,000, and that $400 was well worth it. It makes everyday driving and the road trips, like I mentioned, so much better with three kids. So, yeah, I'm totally not against swapping out similarly priced used vehicles. It's less of a money decision in this case and more of just like a lifestyle decision.
Plus, that $400 was totally worth it given the fact that you got those electronic automatic doors, man.
And the sweet DVD player too, man.
Yeah, well, when you got the kids, like for me, having the doors is clutch.
Oh,
like
it's nice.
Being able to just hit that button, you know, but without even leaving the house. It's like, all right, get outside, get in the car. And then you kind of run down there and scamper down the steps, you know, like
especially when you're trying to like buckle in a 1 year old.
Oh, man.
You click the button on your keychain fob and the door opens for you, then it's so much easier to put the kid in.
We're such dads. Nick, something else I want you to consider too are the frequency of these house projects that you're talking about. I'd love for you to sit down and think about, you know, how often you actually need or how often you actually use a pickup truck, you know? Instead, could you maybe rent one by the hour from Home Depot or Lowe's? You can get one of those for an hour and a half for just $20. It's amazing. There's so much value there. I'm always like, wait, it's only $20 for an hour and a half with a sweet pickup truck?
How do they do that?
I'm not sure. So if you only need one a handful of times per year, you know, that might be a better direction to go in. And the other thing too is like being able to load up your RAV4 with like all this stuff from Lowe's or Home Depot, like it's almost like this badge of honor. I feel like where you're really putting that vehicle to use. I remember back when we had our V-Dub station wagon, dude, we moved couches on top of that thing, like full-size couches, like from city to city. I've transported a refrigerator on top of that thing before. There is a lot that you can do. Is it ideal? No. But, you know, in the rare instances, you know, when you do load it up, I think oftentimes the pickup truck is sort of idolized a little too much. They're like, oh, you need a pickup truck to put those 2x4s in. It's like, oh, do I? Or can I just pop the rear tailgate and have that kind of hanging out a little bit, put the little red plastic flag on there? You're good to go. I personally love doing things that other people don't. And that I think that lends itself well maybe to saving money in particular when it comes to cars.
Yeah, I got a dishwasher in my Nissan Leaf one time and I felt so proud. I was like, I didn't know that was going to work. But I made it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And one other thing to consider, Nick, when you're swapping out used vehicles, well, the great thing is, like I said, there typically aren't any costs you'll incur beyond the maybe increased price of the newer used vehicle that you're getting. And that might not even apply, right? It's not like buying and selling a home where the transaction costs alone make it just prohibitive to move. Some states, though, like ours, Matt, in Georgia, they do assess taxes every time you purchase a vehicle instead of an annual tax based on the car's value.
Yeah, the ad valorem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a recent change that we've had here in Georgia, and that certainly has had an impact on how it is that I view vehicles. You know, I'm not like going to go out there and swap vehicles left and right just because, you know, my needs change a little bit. I'm going to buy something and hang on to it literally until the wheels fall off.
Right, yeah.
Again, like a dad.
Well, and that was the biggest thing that we had to think about when we sold our Mazda and we bought our Honda was literally how long is this car going to work out for us? Because it's the taxes now that we have to consider. And most people in a lot of states, they don't have to think about that. But just heads up, know what your state's tax law is when it comes to car taxes. And if your state does it like we do, I'm not sure what they do in Maine, but if they do it like we do, then that's just one extra cost you have to factor in as to whether it's worth it or not.
Yeah, and so Nick, let's talk about too whether or not this is sort of your craft beer equivalent. I know we're talking about driving here, but I think we can kind of introduce craft beer into this equation.
Of course.
Decisions like this should, of course, involve an assessment of how they'll impact your personal finances, how it'll affect your money. That's basically what we've been talking about here. But this decision impacts so much more than that as well. If this truck will fit your lifestyle like a glove, if this is your craft beer equivalent, right? If these house projects are something that you and your fiance love to do, in particular if it's bringing value to your property, and if you can upgrade with the cash that you have in your bank account and avoid a loan, man, we would say go for it. You know, maybe what you could do too is commit to selling that Hyundai, that Elantra, before buying a used truck so that, one, first of all, you're not stuck with three vehicles for a period of time, and then two, so that you're able to kind of silo those funds from the sale of the Hyundai and then limit yourself to how much you'll actually spend on that pickup truck. I think so much of the slippery slope here is starting to go truck shopping, because then you think, oh, well, if we get the extended bed, then we can fit full-size 4x6 sheets of plywood. Or, oh, I can see myself driving a Toyota. You know, like we've got a RAV4. What if we get like one of those nice Tacomas? Do they even make Tacomas anymore?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, but I could see how you could inflate your expectations.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Versus looking at a used truck that's like 10 years old that you could literally get for the same amount of money that you're selling your Elantra for. That's what I want you to do, Nick.
And that's totally the conversation Emily and I had to have when we were switching from the micro van to the big van was, okay, well, how much are we going to spend a whole lot extra on this? Because we were looking at vans in the $12,000 to $15,000 range. And ultimately, we decided we don't want to do that. We did not want to upgrade to that extent. We wanted to keep the cost similarly aligned. And so, yeah, Matt, I think selling that car first is great advice because it helps you know what you're dealing with, cash on hand, to be able to buy that next vehicle so that you're not going into debt by swapping out used cars. So, Nick, best of luck to you, man, in your home projects and when it comes to that truck you're buying. All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on the show today. This one's called Photon Sphere by Old Hickory Brewing, and listener Christopher tossed this one our way. What were your thoughts on this one, man?
Yeah, man. This is an Imperial Stout, bourbon barrel aged with honey, cinnamon, vanilla, cocoa, and habanero peppers. This is a beer that I feel like I'm tasting every single one of those flavors. This is such a good beer, and I am such a fan of these bigger stouts that are barrel aged, right? And so what that means is literally it's been aged in barrels that used to house bourbon, which imparts this bourbony, sweet oakiness. But at the same time, that stout, it's not overwhelmed with that sweetness in particular, because this one has some of that pepper, some of that spicy action going on. And if you've never had a bigger stout like this that is also spicy, that has peppers in it, you are missing out. I mean, this particular style of stout that has some heat brewed into it is one of my absolute favorite kinds of stouts.
Yeah, I completely agree. Definitely right up my alley. And I feel like all those other goodies that are thrown in, that like the vanilla and the cinnamon, just kind of help counteract that heat. But you get both coming at you at the same time. And it's just well-rounded and delicious. So yeah, I really loved this one. Big thanks to Christopher for sending this one our way.
Yeah, and at the beginning of this episode too, we mentioned how we've been in touch with Christopher. We actually participated in a webinar that a trade organization that he is a part of. So he is a nuclear engineer, and which is part of why this beer is Photon Sphere. I think it has something to do with atomic energy. I'm not smart enough to understand what Photon Sphere is, but it's got some sophisticated scientific drawings there on the front.
All I know is money, man.
We know personal finance. but we were able to speak to his group about personal finances and in particular ways that their members could continue down the path towards financial independence. And so, yeah, that's something that you and I, we've done that a couple times now. And it was a lot of fun. And I think that's something that you and I might want to do more. Instead of talking to us about hopping on a webinar, maybe for your employer or something like that, sounds like something you're looking for, head to howtomoney.com/speak. And we'll have some more information up there.
Yeah, no doubt. That was a lot of fun talking to people that are way smarter than us about the stuff that we know well, though.
That's true.
Yeah. So, all right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone for submitting your questions. If you want show notes for this episode, links to some of the things we mentioned, you can go to our website at howtomoney.com.
And Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.